Welcome back to our study of Genesis. We're going to begin this evening right at chapter 47, and I'm going to read verses 7 through 10, and then we're going to talk about that. And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, How old are ye? And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers, in the days of their pilgrimage. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh, and went out from before Pharaoh.
You know, Joseph brought his brothers before Pharaoh, and his father. Here we get this information about his father also before him, and how Jacob blessed Pharaoh, who was the number one man of the land. Now, usually the greater blesses the lesser, right? Well, the man that's carrying the blessing of God on him is greater. You understand? And so Jacob blesses Pharaoh, and then Pharaoh said, How old are you? And Jacob has a very interesting reply. He's not trying to cover up anything. He says, You know, I've been alive 130 years. He said, My days are few and evil compared to my forefathers. And then after blessing Pharaoh, he goes out from his presence.
You know, something that was just spoken, I hope y'all caught it, was that the one that has the blessing of God on him is greater. As followers of Jesus Christ, those that recognize Him as our Savior, our Redeemer, we have the blessing of the Lord upon us now, don't we? So I hope that you're hearing and gaining insight into who you really are. Verses 11 through 12. And Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread, according to their family.
So if you remember, Pharaoh had told Joseph to give his father and his brothers to settle him in the land of Goshen, but not just Goshen, but Ramesses, which is the very best of the land. And he gave them that land as a possession in the land of Egypt. And Joseph provided for his fathers and for his father and his brothers and all the household with food. Now you think about that, we already looked at 70 people. So Joseph, he's told him, you come down to Egypt and I'll take care of you. So now Joseph has just added 70 more people, to the support. And he keeps his word to them, and Pharaoh's honoring that. And Pharaoh's in agreement with this. Not that Joseph is doing anything underhanded, but he's taking care of them. Now, I was thinking about this this afternoon, how they went to Egypt, I'm talking about Jacob's family, with their livestock, with their flocks, and all their possessions. Because they've been provided for, they don't lose their possessions. So just bear that in mind as we go along with this, okay?
Verse 13, And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine.
You think about this, I mean, is Cana, the land of Cana as well as Egypt are under severe famine. It's taken its toll on the inhabitants of the land, and God has given a provision, not just for Egypt, but for the others around, okay? And because of that, Egypt is going to be blessed as a result of it.
Verse 14. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house.
Now I want you to pay particular attention to how this unfolds. All right, God's given him the wisdom to take care of everybody during the famine so they don't die of starvation. And so he has all this grain stored up. And so to begin with, when the famine gets so severe, the people need grain, they come to Joseph and he sells the grain. You understand, he is looking out for the people, but he's also not allowing Egypt to be taken advantage of as well. He sells them grain. I want you to think about this, until they run out of money. So all the money is going to Pharaoh. It's going into the government, if I can say it that way. And so from they are economically in the midst of famine, prospering financially, as far as the nation, the government goes. Okay?
That's astonishing in that here again what I see is that if we follow God's plan and do things His way, we are going to be blessed in the process of it, even if the circumstances look dismal. We will be blessed.
Yeah.
Verses 15-17. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, "Give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For the money fails." And Joseph said, "Give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fails." And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses, and for the flock, and for the cattle of the herds, and for the asses. And he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year.
So after the people run out of money, they come to Joseph and they say, we don't have any more money. And the bottom line is, we're starving. Help us. Come to our rescue. He said, we have livestock, herds. So in exchange for food, they gave the livestock and the herds. Remember I said that Joseph had provided for his family? So you don't see them giving up their possessions. They're blessed. They're under the blessing of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You understand? And so the people bring their animals and exchange for the grain and make it through the year by giving this medium in exchange. You understand? I don't think we can conceive the severity of the famine, the where what good is possession if you die? And the people were just trying to stay alive. Joseph is keeping them alive with the grain that he had stored up during the 7 years of plenty.
You know, I think about this and think about that profound statement, what good is the possession if you're dying? Well, spiritually speaking, every one of us were in that situation before we gave our hearts to Jesus. What good was anything that we had? Because we were dying, we were dead. And so you think about, will you give your money? Will you give your possessions? We're going to find out later they gave themselves. To me, all this is pointing to Jesus. It all points to Him. Can y'all see it? Verse 18. When that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, will we not hide it from my Lord, how that our money is spent? My Lord also has our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate.
You think about it, the livestock, you know, the herds, the flock, only got food for 1 year. Now, all that's depleted. And so they come to Joseph and say, we don't have anything left. We've given all our money, our livestock's gone. The only thing we have left is the property that we're on in our own bodies. And so Joseph made an agreement with them that he would provide for them, not making them slaves. You understand? But what did he do? He required a percentage of what the ground did yield, and I may be getting ahead of myself, but the bottom line is 20%. All right? You have your property. All right, you go ahead and you do what you can with your property, but from now on, 20% of your yield is going to Pharaoh. You get to keep 80%. It's a shame the leaders of this nation won't do that. They want the 80 and give you the 20. You better move on so I don't get in trouble.
Yeah, okay. But that in and of itself to me is merciful, how they're handling all this. Verse 20. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt even to the other end thereof.
So all the land of Egypt, with the exception of the priest's property, became Pharaoh's. He has all the money, he has all the livestock, and he has all the property. No wonder he liked Joseph. I mean, boy, God was blessing him because of that, of the wisdom of God operating through Joseph. God was blessing Pharaoh. And so because the famine was severe, so severe, the people couldn't survive, so they worked as servants to Pharaoh, okay? By their working, they're taking care of the land, they're tilling the land, they're doing all this. And then Pharaoh's getting a percentage of that, the 20%, okay?
In verse 22.
Now, one other thing I want to look at. People talk about non-profit being exempt from certain things, from tax and all. This heathen nation honored pagan priest. You understand? By an exemption. And really, if you think about the what was going on, it was the what we would call tax revenue, revenue coming in through taxes, this type of thing. But the priests were exempt from that. They didn't lose their property because it was considered through their false gods, they were considered sacred and honorable. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't start with Christianity, is what I'm trying to say. You see where I'm coming from?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just picked up on it when you look, when you get, you fast forward to Moses and how the tribe of Levi had no inheritance of property. But what was their inheritance? It was what was sacrificed to the Lord. And so when you sacrifice to the Lord, you were actually bringing it to the priests and the Levites. And so they were sustained by the contribution that the people were making. You know, when they brought an animal to sacrifice, there was a designated portion that belonged to the priest, to the Levites. You understand? So that was their inheritance. It's pretty interesting when you think about it, how even the heathen will honor those who are in a position of to do religious ceremonies or whatever. Okay?
Let me read verse 22 to back up what Pete was saying. Only the land of the priest bought he not, for the priest had a portion assigned to them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them, wherefore they sold not their land.
See, Pharaoh's providing the priest with the food.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're being sustained, they don't have to get rid of their property. Okay?
Verse 23 and 24.
And also, because Joseph is taking care of these Israelites who come down, Jacob's descendants, they don't have to get rid of their thing. The land was theirs in Egypt, the Goshen land of Goshen. As long as they was there, that was their land. They had their flocks, they had their herds and all that, because they were being provided for.
Verses 23 and 24. Then Joseph said unto the people, Behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase that you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and the food for your little ones.
So they come to Joseph, all we have left is our bodies and our land. Joseph says, okay, then we'll give you food in exchange for that, and we'll give you seed to plant, but here's the stipulation. 20% of your crops are going to Pharaoh when you harvest them. And the other 80% will be retained by you. And so what they're doing is they're working the land. They're working Pharaoh's land. You understand? Because the property now is given to Pharaoh. So they're working his land for 80% of what it produces. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Verse 25. And they said, Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants.
Now, here's the thing. Joseph didn't say 50%. You understand? And the Egyptians told Joseph that you've spared our lives. And they said, may we obtained favor in the eyes of the Lord, and we'll be servants to Pharaoh. They're not upset with Joseph. You understand? He's actually come to their rescue.
And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priest only, which became not Pharaoh's.
So Joseph established a law. That tells you he was in leadership position, that he established a law in Egypt that was still in force when Genesis was written, saying that 20% of the crops produced by the Egyptians would be given to Pharaoh, and the property of the priest was the only ones that was exempt from that law, because he was never sold to Pharaoh in the first place. Okay.
And in verse 27, and Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly.
Now think about this. They go down 70, then they live in Egypt, they're settled there in the land of Goshen, and what happens? They begin to prosper. They begin to reproduce. They had many children. So the family of Israel, the family of Jacob, increased dramatically in number. And you'll find as we go along into Exodus, that they increased in number to where the Egyptians were afraid of them because they were a mightier people. And that's when they want to kill the males, babies, okay?
Verse 28, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the whole age of Jacob was 147 years.
So, how many years did Jacob live in Egypt?
Seven.
What did he tell Pharaoh? When Pharaoh said, how old are you? What did he say? I'm 130. And he lived to be 147, so he lived in Egypt 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Verses 29 through 31. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die, and he called his son Joseph, and said unto him, if now I have found grace in your sight, put, I pray you, your hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray you, in Egypt, but I will lie with my fathers, and you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as you have said. And he said, swear unto me. And he swore unto him. And Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head.
Now, you can see here that Jacob recognizes and honors Joseph's position of authority as a ruler in Egypt. And so he says to him, if I found favor in your sight, isn't that interesting to say to your son?
Mm-hmm.
If I found favor in your sight, then I want you to treat me kindly and truthfully, and put your hand under my thigh and promise me that you'll not bury me in Egypt. Now, Joseph is a ruler in Egypt, you understand. And Jacob says, swear to me. Now, I can't give you all the detail of what it means, but there's something significant in their custom, their culture, about putting the hand under the thigh. Today, you think about someone laying their hand on a Bible, you understand. But that putting the hand under the thigh signified that you are not going to back out of this. In other words, I swear to you that I will honor your request. And that's what Jacob is asking Joseph to do by putting his hand under his thigh. And he said, I want to be buried with my ancestors. I don't want to be buried in Egypt. Now I want you to think about this. God had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob the land of Canaan. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where was Abraham buried? Where was Isaac buried? Where did Jacob want to be buried? In the land of Canaan, not in Egypt. I want to be buried in the place God gave me the land. You with me?
Amen. And then he bowed his head. And he bowed his head in the bed.
Now, remember Joseph's dream?
Yeah.
His father now is bowing to him. And so after Joseph honors his father's request, Jacob, he bowed on his bed, and what's he doing? He's giving homage, the respect of the superior, the ruler, just like Joseph's dream that he saw. You understand? Remember the moon and the stars?
Yeah.
Bowing before him, right?
That's exactly right. It's amazing, isn't it? Let's look at chapter 48. And in this chapter, we're going to see about Israel's preparation for death and the blessing of Joseph's son, Ephraim and Manasseh. In verse 1, "And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, Behold, thy father is sick, and he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim."
So after Joseph has made this promise to his father, we don't know the time period, we just know it was sometime after this, that word is sent to him, your daddy's sick. And he knows that he's probably not going to be living long. So Joseph takes his two sons, and here you're seeing Manasseh placed before Ephraim because Manasseh was the firstborn. Okay, later on you'll see Ephraim placed before Manasseh. Okay.
"And one told Jacob and said, Behold, thy son Joseph comes unto thee, and Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed."
Evidently he's pretty weak, but when he hears Joseph is coming, he musters up enough strength and courage to the point that he can sit up on the bed.
Verses 3 and 4. "And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said unto me, Behold, I will make you fruitful, and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession."
So Jacob is just reminding Joseph of what God has spoken to him when he went to Paddan Aram, you know, fleeing from Esau. He said, God appeared to me at Bethel. Remember that? That's where he had the stone for a pillow,
yeah,
and poured oil on it, made it a pillar, a memorial.
Yeah.
He said, he in the land of Canaan, he said, he blessed me. He said to me, I'll make you fruitful and multiply you. Now, you understand, Jacob is alone at this time. And he said, I will cause a multitude of people to come forth from you, and I will give this land to your descendants who have not yet been born for an everlasting covenant. Now, Jacob is seeing this thing starting to unfold. Now he's up to 70. He went down with nothing. He came back across into Canaan with possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And now by the time he goes into Egypt, he has a very large family. He has possessions, herds, flock, and all this. So he's seeing God's faithfulness to him. And so he's reminding Joseph of this.
Mm-hmm. verse 5 and 6. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto you in the land of Egypt before I came unto you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, they shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance.
So, as Israel or Jacob tells Joseph that his two sons, note this, he doesn't say Manasseh and Ephraim. Mm-hmm. He says Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born in the land of Egypt before Jacob went to the land. He said, they'll be like Reuben and Simeon. They'll be my sons. Reuben and Simeon were not in the greatest favor with their father because mm-hmm. of what they had done. We'll see this a little later on when he speaks the blessing. But he said, these two sons will be like Reuben and Simeon. Now, any children born to Joseph in the future would not have a separate inheritance in the land, but they would receive their portion of inheritance within their brother's inheritance. In other words, they would receive their portion within Manasseh and within Ephraim, and they would be called by that particular brother's name. Now here's the thing that interests me in all this. Jacob is telling what's going to happen before they ever grow into a nation, but haven't made their exodus from Egypt. Moses dies, and who divides the land? Joshua divides the land. But isn't it interesting that he's fulfilling what Jacob has told Joseph? When he divides that land, two portions, Manasseh and Ephraim, but Manasseh is the smaller. Ephraim has outgrown Manasseh. And later on, northern Israel is generally referred to as Ephraim. It's used in exchange for the northern Israel, the northern nation.
To me, that is just so amazing that the power of this man's word would, you know, they didn't even leave Egypt. They were in captivity 400 years. I mean, we're talking a long time. But this word, this spoken word, meant so much that it was held on, you know, people held on to it. It wasn't forgotten. It wasn't dismissed. Our words mean something, y'all.
He's not saying this hoping it'll come to pass.
No.
He's saying it because he knows it's coming to pass. There's a difference. Faith is speaking. It's not someone speaking trying to believe. I'll let you think about that.
There's power in that. Those spoken words spoken in faith. There is tremendous power in that. An amazing thing. Verse 7. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath, and I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem.
So Jacob reminds Joseph about Joseph's mother's death, Rachel's death. He said, I'm going back, you know, in the land of Canaan after living in Padan Aram those 20 years. And he says, your mother Rachel died in the land of Canaan. We were just a short distance from Bethlehem. That's what Ephrath is. It's Bethlehem, another name for Bethlehem. We were just a short distance from there. And he said, I buried it beside the road that goes to Ephrath, or that goes to Bethlehem.
Y'all pay attention to the order of it. Let me tell you about what my God said to me. Now let me tell you about what the one that I love, what happened to her. You see in the progression of this? And then let's look at verses 8 and 9. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, "Who are these?" And Joseph said unto his father, "They are my sons, whom God has given me in this place." And he said, "Bring them, I pray you, unto me, and I will bless them."
You understand, and we'll see this, that Jacob has impaired vision. Okay, he's not seeing. So he says, "Who's are these?" And he said, "These are my sons." And Jacob says, "Bring them near me." Okay.
Verse 10. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them.
So when Joseph brings the boys near to him, then Jacob embraces his grandsons, and he kisses them. Okay, we didn't think you'd see Joseph. Now he's seen Joseph's son. We're going to have to stop here. Our time's up. We'll pick back up with this in the next session. Okay.
Verse.